The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
In order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Welcome, everybody, to the Friday edition of the Don't Back Down show. We got a full house. I got Vicky here. She's fired up. We've got.
How can you not get fired up with that cheering section?
Let's go, Brandon. Yeah, I'm expecting a call shortly.
Yeah.
Although I've handled this very well, I've figured it out.
What is it?
Well, you remember when the Angel of Death was. Moses was trying to get his people out of Israel,
mm-hmm.
and the angel of death. So what happened? And Andy can verify this story.
I was not there.
oh, come on, Andy.
Moses directed people to put blood on their mantle, and the angel of death would pass them over.
Mm-hmm.
I figured out how we could do that today, because clearly between the DOJ, the FBI, and everything else going on, put a couple of Biden signs on your lawn, and the FBI and the DOJ will pass right over. All right, so that's how you solve that particular problem.
Or hate that's has not no till home April. Here.
That's not till April. I don't know. The one thing I wanted to bring out is real important is, in 2020, we were all asleep at the switch because I don't think we realize that a political party would go to the extremes of really changing the outcome of an election by doing certain things. Now, I don't want to get caught in this ongoing, trap, but there's clearly evidence that's out there that that the 2020 election, at the very least, should have been at least investigated in a much more full matter. As I brought out when I went in front of the Montgomery County commissioners, that rigging elections in United States, in America, is not new. In fact, the Tammany Hall, which was a Democratic Party in New York, rigged elections for about 150 years until LaGuardia was elected in the 1930s, and he was a Republican, by the way, just saying. And then, of course, we have the solid Democrat South for well over 200 years. Not only did they rig elections, they prevented people from registering any other party, and it was physically done, too. So there are a lot of examples of rigged elections.
Wasn't there also the example of Nixon?
Yes. Nixon, interesting story. And if you read the book by Monica Crowley, who actually worked with Nixon the last 4 years of his life, Nixon actually was presented on election night 1960 with clear evidence that Illinois had rigged the election. Now, you have to preface this. Both Nixon and Kennedy served in the military. Nixon was in the Navy, and so was Kennedy. Of course, Kennedy was somewhat of a hero, and then you had Kennedy's brother, Joseph Kennedy, who was killed in an experiment plane that just blew up completely, and none of his remains were ever found. Clearly, Kennedy was a lot more charismatic than Nixon. Nixon came from a Quaker family. They were not very wealthy at all. And, of course, Kennedy came from this very wealthy family in Massachusetts. So there was a lot of significant difference. But he was presented with the case. But because he had this friendship relationship with Kennedy, he said he did not want to put the country to that because at the time, those people that are not old enough to remember, but I do, I mean, literally, we were doing duck and cover in our classrooms because we practiced for nuclear attacks. That's how bad things were in the 1960s. So there is evidence, and most of the time, almost 100% of the time, the big elections have been rigged in some way. So I'm asking people right now, if you vote, bring your cameras with you. A volunteer to watch these drop boxes and everything else. That's the rules of the game. So let's play by the rules of the game, but let's make sure that we do not fall asleep at the switch. Let's photograph these boxes. If we see anything suspicious, fine. When I was at the Montgomery County Board of Elections, based on Title 25.
Title 25.
I presented them with at least maybe a couple thousand names of people that should not be on the Montgomery County voter rolls.
Have you heard anything back?
Not yet. I did give it to the solicitor. I will be presenting more names that should be removed immediately. And Andy, you can speak to that. Andy Teitelman is an attorney and has handled some of this stuff. You want to speak to the...
Well, yes. Currently, Audit the Vote PA is working on a statewide drive. We were hoping to get it done this week at the beginning, the test cases, but hopefully by early next week, mid next week, we're filing petitions under two particular sections of the election code, Title 25, Section 1509 and Section 1329, which allows other electors to challenge the registrations of people who they contend should not be registered. The good news about this, Stan, is these are what we call shall statutes, meaning once the petitions are filed and properly certified, the election commissions are required to remove the challenged electors. It's a little more complicated than that, but it would take too long and everyone would fall asleep if I got into all of the details. But we have a lot of boots on the ground. We have all of our forms ready to go, and we're going to start the test cases, and we're going to be running these petitions statewide. Vic Obertoli, who is Audit the Vote's chief statistician and numbers fellow, has somewhere in the neighborhood of 500,000 registrations in Pennsylvania that we can prove are improper because these people no longer exist where they're registered.
In fact, there has been actual canvassing being done to these homes, and we'll go to the door, and they'll say, oh, these people never lived here. So the technique that was used was, let's cram these voter rolls, put it out there, and then send out all these mail-in ballots. And that's why we actually have videos of people putting 10 and 20 mail-in ballots into this box, as shown in the movie
2000 Mules.
And the evidence there is overwhelming that there were shenanigans played. I mean, when you have geo-tracking of phones, it shows a guy going to umpteen different exact places where the mail-in drop boxes were, you know something was going on. It got to the point where they actually told people, if you're going to do that, shut off your phone.
So, Andy, I have a question for you. Since under this Title 25, since Stan took those signatures in and presented those signatures, what are they? Because they're just going to turn around and say, we didn't know we were supposed to do something with these signatures. Under the title, what are they supposed to do with those signatures?
So what they're supposed to do or what they're mandated to do, they're two different things. Stan walking in with that list, they are supposed to, under Section 1901, investigate that on their own and clear any of the registrations that would be deemed improper. But they're not mandated to do it just because Stan walked in with the list. Now, that list also was generated by Mr. Bertoli, and those are some of the names that we will be filing formal petitions either under 1509 or 1329 to have removed from the Montgomery County voter registration rolls. Once the petitions are filed, they shall remove those names unless the electors being challenged actually contest the challenge. And in order to do that, they'd have to come before the commission and prove that they actually still reside at the address of registration, which none of them can do.
Because none of them are there. I think the oldest person who voted in the 2020 election was 125, and I've been trying to find his house, so I know it figured out what he was drinking. But this is where the election is, so I'm asking people to volunteer your time. Take an hour when you go to vote. Spend an hour there afterwards. Get to know your neighbors. You'll find it very invigorating to be there and watch politics in action, which is a very exciting thing in America. And as I said in the last program, I've been doing it since I had hard hats for Nixon. But we have another great discussion this morning, this afternoon, and we have Shannon Harris here, who has a very interesting story to tell. Welcome, Shannon, to our little hole in the wall here.
Coffee clutch.
The coffee clutch. And we have Dr. Samuel Ravenel on the phone, who is a world-class. I mean, if you look at his CV, this gentleman has had somewhat 40-some years of pediatric excellence and expertise from the military on over. He's retired now. You could have retired. After I saw your CV, you should have retired like 20 years ago because you already did enough work for the 40 years. But I want Shannon to tell her story about what happened to her and how crazy things have gotten in this society in the last couple of years. So, Shannon, why don't you tell people exactly? And I'll preface this. Shannon is not an anti-vaxxer in any stretch of the imagination. I mean, her kids have gotten polio vaccines and all the other vaccines, which, by the way, these vaccines actually stop you from getting that disease. If you get the polio vaccine, you're not going to get polio. However, the latest statistic shows that 95% of the people in the hospital for COVID have been vaccinated at least once.
Stan, I have another article here that the Gateway Pundit puts out on its daily basis. They don't tell you why, but a teenage athlete dying suddenly for reasons that, and so I call these climate change deaths.
The climate change deaths, which we shouldn't laugh, but I think, Shannon, you have some background in pharmaceutical industry, so why don't you tell your story and how Dr. Ravenel came to your rescue.
Thank you so much for having me. I just basically just want to share my story to hopefully help other people. It's been a long year for me and for my children. And I've been successful in just what your show says is just don't back down. And when it's your children, you don't back down. And I just want to hopefully have everybody get something out of what I'm going to tell you today. It basically starts with the vaccine rollout. And my background is in pharmaceutical research, a very small amount. This is before I had kids. I worked in California. I worked in the safety arm of drug discovery. And so even though I had a little bit of experience, generally anybody who works in the pharmaceutical industry knows the FDA process. And when this vaccine came out under emergency use authorization, red flags went up for me personally, even though I hadn't been in the industry. And I started doing some research on it. And knowing that, you know, you're a mother, you want to protect your children, you want to know what's coming on. And people, other doctors, like frontline doctors, were, you know, speaking out against it. And I was like, whoa, what's going on here? And knowing my own experience of the FDA approval process in that it takes 5 to 10 years to get a drug through to market and into humans for that specific safety reason, that gave me a red flag. So,
well, they're still doing the 5-year experiment. It's just instead of mice, they're using humans today. That's the only difference.
And we're in the second year of it.
And we're in the second year.
So
go ahead, Shannon.
So, you know, like any parent, whether you're divorced or not, you have some discussions with your other spouse or ex about, you know, giving your children a medication. And through the spring of 2021, you know, it hadn't been approved for my kids, but, you know, by June it had. And at that point, I had enough information to say, I don't want this thing in my children.
Up to this point, you had both had 50-50 custody and, you know, was in an amicable situation and everything else like that.
So my ex-husband and I were always there for our kids. We were always able to discuss things. We both had scientific background. Whether or not it was sports or whatever, we were always there for our kids too. And, you know, so we never even had an issue before the COVID vaccine at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, again, many families, something like that that's so big and contentious, it, you know, causes a lot of angst and anxiety for everybody. So by June, my ex was coming to me and saying, hey, I want to give, you know, this to the kids. And I was like, nope. Let's wait. I tried to, like, you know, push him off, say, well, this is, you know, this is coronavirus. This is really a flu. So let's why don't we wait another 6 months until October comes out? Maybe we'll have more information.
Plus, there was data there that showed children under a certain age, I think 18 or something like that, there was actually zero deaths unless there was some really pre-existing condition that was pretty serious.
But and most of the counties were putting out numbers like that.
Yeah, so that was that data was well known that this was out there, that the kids recovered from this very quickly.
Yes.
If they even had symptoms.
If they even had symptoms.
Or if they even got it.
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, but there was also talk at the federal level about vaccine mandates, which scared me. In L.A., they were actually talking about mandating the vaccine to attend school. And I was already involved in my school district with, you know, a lawsuit against them for masking kids. And then, you know, by that fall, we realized, some parents in my school district realized that Wolf was going to come right back in and try and mask our kids again. And so we got together into another lawsuit to go against Secretary Beam for illegally masking our children, because it really is the discretion of our county health department to do that, and she overstepped that. So at that point, I was in two lawsuits. All of a sudden, a third one comes at me, and this time it was from my own ex-husband. I was very blindsided by it. Not to the fact that
Told you he was going to do this or anything else like this. No negotiations, nothing other than the fact that let's wait and see what, here's some statistics here.
I think there was other things involved, like me being involved in other things with the state and things like that, that he was more concerned about. But nothing was even said to me about it. And so then I look at the actual lawsuit, and it's basically saying, you know, not only do we want medical custody, which this is a medical issue, but I want physical custody, meaning and we think you're mentally insane, and we want, if you are going to get any custody, we want supervised visits.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, my God is right. And so I was like, what the heck? So I immediately went to talk to him and said, why are you doing this? Mind you, the mental questioning was based on a couple of Facebook posts that opposing counsel picked out, cherry picking, saying that this proves that she's mentally insane.
From a Facebook post.
Right. So my Facebook page was a political, at that point, because I was so
passionate
about everything that was going on in the world. And I had turned my Facebook page into a political Facebook page. And, you know,
I'm surprised they even let it stay up.
Believe me, I'd been censored many times. But
welcome to the club.
Right, exactly. You know, it's like how many
Facebook
times?
Jail.
It's like a badge of cover.
Exactly.
I keep on telling you, put a Joe Biden little thing up at the top of the page, and they'll just pass right over. It'll fool their algorithms. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's totally fine. So just, you know, at that point, I tried to talk to him just to say, you know, this is our family. Let's not bring it into court. Let's see if we can, you know, work this out some way. And it was nope. So the one thing I can say about, you know, this whole thing, it took over a year to finish it. And what I can say from one aspect is that God was always on my side. And what I think God did was not only he helped me have the strength to get through it, but also he gave me time. Just in the general,
you also had the facts on your side.
Had the facts on my side too, but that, you know, comes with hard work and working with a great lawyer. So during that time, I went to the law firm, which is Zlock Grazillo Law Firm. That was who I'd done my divorce through, went back to them, and they partnered me with Dan Mashi. When I went and first started talking to him, he said, hey, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but I want you to know that you are up against a wall. What was happening at the time, according to him, in our county, probably happening all across the county, was that divorced parents were having such a conflict with this that they were bringing that specific matter of the COVID vaccine right into court. And it became a dogfight. And what he was saying was that most of the courts were just automatically siding with the CDC and the FDA, no questions asked.
So that really wasn't a review of facts. They threw the fact that you're crazy and stuff like that at you, and look at these Facebook posts and things like that.
And instead of working with you behind the scenes and having conversations, they wanted to kind of centralize this.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, just in general, like, I have a background in the pharmaceutical industry, so I was able to dig for the facts and learn and try and go in there with some kind of defense, but most people don't even have that background.
You are equipped for this based on experience, yeah. So God was with you.
Yes, he was. Absolutely. But, you know, my lawyer was saying, you know, I'm gonna be there for you. I'm going to do everything I can to fight with you because I do believe in what you're saying, but we're going to have to work really hard because just don't even expect that you're even going to win. And
so you're going to court and they're throwing all this negative stuff to you, never discussing the facts. So now, you know, at some particular point in time, you're going to have to get your expert witness because they've got their little expert witness. And let's talk about how you wound up with Dr. Samuel Ravel.
Ravenel.
As some of the questions. So give a little background on that because that's an interesting part of this whole story.
Yeah, it's talk about God being on your side. Let me just back up for a second because there's something I do want to bring up in terms of the medical doctors and the censorship that was going on during the time. It's not just in Pennsylvania.
You're talking about the censorship of doctors who have questions.
Right.
Who just want to be scientifically about it, which is about questioning things that are out there. That's how humanity has gotten to be much better, although I think it's taken a turn to the worse, but that's another story. But go ahead.
So my lawyer, Dan, you know, obviously opposing counsel had brought our pediatrician in to testify as an expert witness that the COVID vaccine was necessary. And so he had said to me, you know, pretty much our only strategy is to get a doctor to oppose that. That's the only way that I know of that you're going to win. And so we started looking in January of 2021. And I did, two things happened. I talked to a colleague of my own pediatrician group about the vaccine, and she gave me some interesting information. She told me, I had asked her if she could help with our situation, maybe outside of court, talk to my ex even and say, hey, you know, there is some credibility to the myocarditis that's happening with children. You know, your kids are teenagers. They have a risk. And she's like, no, I can't talk. I can't talk to him. I said, why not? This isn't it. This isn't court. I'm not asking you to testify. This is like a patient confidentiality thing. And she's like, oh, no, he'll report me. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, every pediatrician in the state was given a letter sent by the medical board saying that if they spoke ill about the COVID vaccine, their licenses could be threatened.
Do you have a copy of that? Did you ever see it?
I do not. I've seen other documents from other states of the same kind of thing happening. Yeah.
Of course, that was issued by the Secretary of Health through her offices or his offices, which was Rachel Levin, who is the Secretary of Health who does not believe in the science of biology.
Now the Admiral of Illness for the federal government.
Right, the Admiral of Illness. Yes. And but we digress here, but go ahead.
So, I mean, that doctor was out, right? And just talking in my own, just even talking to my ex-husband about this conversation. I went to another doctor who had spoken out at a school board meeting at a local area, thinking that she might be able to help me, and she's local. She actually initially agreed to testify, and this was January of 2021, initially agreed to testify, said, you know, I don't know if I'll be successful, but I do agree with you, and I'm going to help you. Long story short is that during that time, or even previously, she had her own law suit, or a complaint issued to the medical board of herself for speaking out in that school board meeting.
Yeah, that's what they did. If you spoke out, they went after you.
So,
oh, they were even controlling school members too, with the same type of letter.
They're doing the same thing in the legal community. Anyone who stands up for our rights, whether they're protecting the J6 defendants or anything else, gets attacked.
Well, look what happened to anybody who has been a lawyer for Trump. They come in, they just
do,
and like I say, just start putting the Biden signs on their lawn. They'll pass right over, you know. But
I couldn't do that. My lawn would die.
Yeah. So here you are now trying to find somebody, and how did you? Because that's an interesting part of this story.
It is an interesting story.
So, and of course, again, this you can kind of say, there's something supernatural about this. Yeah. You know, there's got to be a God here, but go ahead.
So what I can say is, as you know, I obviously have a science background. I was digging into the research, but I was also, you know, I'm a competitive person and I like
would
to
not
win.
Have noticed that
would
at
not
all.
Have noticed that. And you know, so I tried to put my lawyer hat on a little bit too, and I really delved into, you know, the law and had lots of conversations with my lawyer, and he was very amenable to teaching me as much as he says I was teaching him about science. And we really were a great team. And he kept telling me, you know, we're only going to win with actual, obviously, government documents. So, for instance, we were prepping through Senator Johnson's letters to the FDA and CDC, trying to get them as evidence into our case. Looking at lawsuits, other lawsuits that had been filed that maybe would actually rule, and then we can use it as precedent. So, you know, I'm trying to just do anything I can, trying to work hours and hours and hours. I can't even tell you how many hours, but of course this is for my kids. So by June, we had gone through two hearings, and at that point, there was a temporary order put in place where I actually lost custody.
I was dumbfounded when I read this report of the case, and she loses custody of her children.
Oh, my God.
And
preemptorily, before they've even had a full-blown hearing.
She didn't even talk to my kids and ask them what they wanted.
You're referring to the judge.
A judge made this decision without conversation with the parties involved.
We had been in court that day, and then my lawyer had just finished cross-examining Jeremy, my ex-husband, and all of a sudden at the end, the judge says, well, I'm going to issue a temporary order giving physical custody of the children to him and medical custody.
And
what did this do to your children? I'm sorry, well, I got to give a mom a point of view
here.
Yeah,
but I will say this, Shannon's children are over 13.
Yes. Yeah, but even
I don't
want to
be specific on the age, but they're over 13.
They're teenagers that rely on their mamas. I'm sorry. I have boys, girls.
Yep.
And at their teenage years is when they need the most emotional support from mamas.
Yeah. I mean, my custody dropped. Well, I was completely inconsolable. I couldn't even, so basically she said, okay, you guys work it out now. Work out the new custody. And so we went out in the hallway and I was just like, Dan.
No, I'm not going to agree to it.
Well, what was they going to do?
No, so, she totally shifted the leverage to your ex and took away any power you had in that discussion.
Right. And so for the summer, but she said, you know, I'm going to have you have that mental evaluation. I'm going to have.
They required a mental examination for it, too. Could you believe this? I mean, this is America.
Because you're a mama bear, you have to go under these mental tests.
No, it's because she engaged in political satire that they decided to take.
That's being a mama bear these days, because there's a lot of mamas that are stepping up, as you have done. Oh, my God.
A judge's responsibility, this is how I've tried to
justify it,
is that a judge's responsibility is to look at the children's benefit. And at that point, she needed to know, I guess, certain things to give her evidence of where she needed to protect the children. And that's what her sole job is. So that's all I can say is that that's what I believe happened. I took it in stride. It was devastating.
So you do the psychiatry thing. The person looks at your children, looks at your ex-husband, everything else like that. So you do that, but you still need to get an expert witness.
So this is where my lawyer says to me, we need a miracle because we thought the judge was at least considering us in our plight, and it doesn't seem that way. She's now
especially after she flipped the switch like that and did something completely out of left field.
He says to me, we need a doctor. We just need a doctor. And so I went and I spoke to another lawyer, and just to get an outside opinion of it really briefly, and it was more of like a friend. And he basically says, you got to find somebody who's already been standing up. You got to find a McCullough or a Dr. Malone. And I looked at him. I was bawling. I was like, how in the heck am I going to find how? They're not going to help me. They're too busy fighting their own fight, right, which is great.
But they have their own censorship going on.
They have their own little me. So
let me do this. I'm going to do a little
capitalistic moment.
And I'm going to get people. I want you to stay by because the story is not over yet.
I know. Well, you got to hurry up and do
Dara
this.
Rabbit now.
She's spilling water on me and everything else.
I get so excited.
So let me tell you about my good friend, Diane. Okay. All right. Let me tell you about my good friend, Diane Cardano, and her EXP Worldwide Real Estate team. There is no doubt people are scared today with inflation off the charts, interest rates increasing, and you've got to sell your house or you've got to buy a new house. As you know, the impact of an ideologically driven government administration and bureaucracy that clearly cares little about the economic concerns of working people and their families is driving us all toward the cliffs. Well, I know someone, Diane Cardano, because of her many years in the real estate business, her MBA in marketing, her negotiating skills, and her expertise in economically difficult times, knows the strategy that can help you buy and sell your home in this market and keeping you from falling off the cliff. Diane is a true real estate expert who never backs down, never gives up for her clients. She is a tough negotiator and a fighter, will get the job done. Diane has a true understanding of the current market conditions and can sell or find the right property that meets her client's needs and dreams. So how does Diane do it? First, Diane keeps her clients informed by our monthly home real estate marketing updates. These updates have helped many of her clients determine the process and timing for selling their home or buying their home. Second, Diane meets individually with all of her clients. Diane answers their questions, designs a personalized real estate marketing strategy that will optimize the selling price of their home and help meet the budget if you're buying a home, and the best strategy around those type of programs. All of Diane's programs are designed to take the stress out of selling and buying your house and, as I said, keep you from falling off that cliff. So if you need to sell your home or you need to move into a new home, now's the time to call Diane at 215-576-8666. That's 215-576-8666. Or go online to www.215-576-8666.com. Meet with Diane and her staff, and you will definitely be in the driver's seat in getting that house or selling that house of your dreams. So let's get back to this story because I got people on the edge of their seats. I hear traffic law cars out there skidding to stops and everything else. So now how did you come up with Dr. Ravenella?
Well, it was a miracle for sure. So again, Dan, my lawyer, Dan Mashi, excellent. He's, strategizing. He's telling me, all right, well, we need a smoking gun. So I said, okay, I better just start trying to email. So I start looking on websites. It's like contacting Stu Peters to try and get me a lawyer, contacting frontline
doctors.
You're
definitely immersed in this whole process.
Absolutely, hours. So I went to Thomas Rentz's law website because I've been following some of his lawsuits that he's been trying to help.
He's doing great work.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. He's amazing. And I look
By the way, are you listening to this, America, what is happening in your country today because of policies that do not care about people? It's unbelievable. That's why we have to make the decision whether we're going to heat or eat because of the prices of stuff. But go ahead.
So one of his cases, I went and started looking just to see where it was at. Because, again, if you have a law case that's been actually ruled on by a judge, that can set precedent for you and you can use it as evidence. So I start looking at the list of documents that have been filed in the case, and it's just like a calendar of it. I notice four or five affidavits, And I said, well, what are these? Who are these people? These are actually people who are actually filling out and testifying in court and submitting it as evidence. And I said, all right. So I start clicking on who these people are. Some of them I didn't know. And then all of a sudden I come up and it's Dr. McCullough. And I start reading through it. And at the very bottom of it is an email address. And I said, jackpot. So amongst the other 30 doctors I had emailed that day, I email him. He gets back to me in 2 hours.
There's God again.
Yes. And basically, my next hearing was August 3rd, and I was trying to contact him, but I already knew he was busy. He actually was down in Hillsdale College with Senator Johnson doing an interview and a conference with him. So I was like, I already know you're busy, but can you help me? He writes back 2 hours later, two doctors. One was Dr. Ravenel, one was another Dr. Perot, with their actual phone numbers.
So and you called Dr.
Ravenel. So I called Dr. Ravenel, and was scared to death, was like, I don't even know what's going to happen. God help me. And he picks up the phone right on the ring.
Says, and we have him on the line, yeah. So we're going to reunite you with Dr. Ravenel. Dr. Ravenel, are you there?
I'm here listening with great fascination.
you don't already know the story?
So
yes, this is the real impact of it.
Yes. Yeah. So you can see now, I'm looking at your CV, and I tell you, all of your expertise, your service in the military, your years in working in private practice and everything else, but you're retired now. And that gave you an opportunity. They can't take anything away from you because you've done it all. And it gives you an opportunity to really address and look at the scientific information that's out there and draw conclusions based on your vast experience and knowledge. So why do you feel strongly about this vaccination, or I don't even want to call it a vaccination, this COVID jab? And why are you speaking out about it and then supporting Shannon in her predicament that she was
sure.
in?
One minor clarification. In addition to being retired, equally if not more important, I also chose upon retirement to relinquish my medical license, not to maintain it. Because to do that, I would have had to continue to do CME activities and answer questions that I knew the answer to, but I would have had to answer the questions with information which I knew to be false, because that's what the mainstream world tends to do now. There are narratives that you have to give the right answer. So I relinquished my license, so they could not take my license away from me. I didn't have one. So with that in mind, being
you are my hero, by the way. I'm going to have a picture of you on my mantelpiece, and I'm going to burn candles to you every night. Let me tell you, I thank you for your courage.
And I was coming from a perspective of being a pediatrician after 49 years of studying all these things, especially the last 12, studying vaccines intensively, and being a father and a grandfather. I learned in my initial few months of study, which now is 3,700 hours worth, I learned that it's simple. The children are at negligible risk for dying or serious illness, hospitalization. Number two, in fact, the rate of mortality rate from COVID, even when the earlier versions, which were more lethal than the ones now, the CDC actually acknowledged was less than that of influenza. So there's no real big risk to the children. There is early treatment available, even though suppressed. It is widely available, and it was then through sources that are not intimidated by political correctness. So any risk that kids had, if they did get sick, they could be treated. And then the investigational genetic therapies, which what they are, they're not theoretically literally vaccines, the mRNA and viral vector DNA, realized early that 5 to 10 years as usual, 2 years minimum for any new vaccine in history. This time we're talking, they gave the emergency authorization in 3 months of data.
Doctor, can you explain the difference between an emergency use authorization and approval?
Sure. Emergency use authorization, which is called EUA, is available through the in the United States for treatments or vaccines for which there is not adequate data to determine they're safe or effective, but based on emergency conditions and the hope that they'll prove to be that, can be implemented in emergency conditions. And furthermore, under those conditions, the manufacturers of the vaccines and the people who prescribe them are immune from liability, in essence. So that's where, and then in the case of COVID, the vaccines, of course, in the very beginning, the potential market was and has been the population of the planet. Never in history has anything even remotely approached such a magnitude of a market. So the financial incentives were and are just almost astronomically indescribable. And so those conditions made me very, very concerned. Then the more I studied, the more I learned, the more concerned I got. To summarize why I come to that conclusion, I learned that the total number of deaths of individuals following their taking one of these vaccines, by 6 to 9 months into the vaccine program, the total number of deaths in about a year at that time was greater than the entire total of all 70 other vaccines, deaths following them for 30 years before the pandemic.
Could you just repeat that statistic so that these people out here can under just what you just said is unbelievable.
It is astonishing. The VAERS is the Vaccine Adverse Event Recording System, which the government set up to be intended to be a red flag if things went wrong with new drugs and new vaccines, in which case they could pull the plug on the agent that was associated with drastic things happening. In the case of these vaccines, or these shots, however you want to call them, the numbers came out. I'll read it right here. This is from a reference. As of August 12, 2022, there had been, 30,347 over the preceding 20 months, greater than the total deaths of all 70 or so other vaccines, which was 7,171 over the preceding 30 years altogether.
The amazing thing about the fact, besides the starkness of the numbers that you just stated, is how it was not publicized on anywhere inside the mainstream media, and you'd have to go looking for those numbers. And the other thing about VAERS is, I think, depending on who you speak to, it only captures about 2 to 10% of the actual events, and therefore you have multiply the recorded events by many exponential factors to find out what's really happening in the field.
Yeah, most people can't even cognitively, even seriously consider the possibility that these are true. Is so incredible. So I don't even, I do talk about the underreporting. But the other thing to realize is that the only previous vaccines that were pulled, the previous vaccine, not mRNA, but another vaccine, I believe it was SARS, flu, or whatever, one of the earlier ones, there were 50 deaths in a new vaccine, and they stopped the program immediately, permanently. 50 deaths. Yes. We're now talking what I just said, 30,000 deaths. Mm-hmm. It's beyond, and that's not even accounting for the underreporting, which is huge. So to say that these vaccines are safe, unqualified, and effective, unqualified, is it's ludicrous. That's the only word for it. And I tell people all the time, don't take my word. Do not take my word. Look at the data. The data is all that matters. And when they do that, they say, holy cow, if not something else.
Yeah, it's a shame we don't have a media and a journalists that are willing to shed the light on the shadows of this really a debacle that's gone on and forcing people to do it. So let me ask this, because I'm looking at the time and everything else. Doctor, you were asked by Shannon to help her, and you jumped right into it because of these deep concerns that you had about it. I mean, when I read about a 17-year-old student dying on the field, and all these male athletes that have been dying, and all of them, the one commonality through everything is that they've all had COVID vaccine. And then you read reports of undertakers who indicate that, you know, when they try to draw the blood out of the body, it's very thick. Do you believe that there's some kind of linkage there? You mean, as far as what you're seeing, as far as data, that more investigation should be done and there should be some kind of red flag going up here?
Absolutely. I agree with Dr. McCullough, who has expressed the opinion that this program really should be stopped immediately. It should have been stopped already. And exactly what you said been done. Clotting, the spike, the whole mechanism in about a 30-second explanation. The vaccine, if you want to call it a vaccine, produces in the body, it stimulates the body's own cells to produce what's called the spike protein, a part of the natural virus. Mm-hmm. That part of the virus is the part of the virus that causes most of the damage from the virus itself.
Oh.
So thing makes your body produce a component of the virus that causes a lot of the damage.
It's just.
And then it moves throughout your body.
And then it moves throughout your body and the whole thing. So,
yeah.
So you write a report. Now, you now have this case. You now have somebody that just came out of the blue here who is.
I mean, he's blowing us away in just this very short period.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, and we all know on this show and the people that listen to the show, we all know that, you know, science doesn't get advanced unless you ask questions. And when you see flags, you got to start asking more questions and everything else. And we all sense this is happening. I know very early on I had an affair at my house, and there was a doctor from the University of Pennsylvania there. And he, at the end of the event, he comes up to me and says, are you going to take the vaccine? And he knows a little bit about me, knows how old I am and everything. And I said, I don't know what's, and he looks at me and he says, do not take this vaccine. Just like that.
And he was disappeared the next day. He hasn't been seen since.
I have not seen him. Who knows where he is? So the type of report that you wrote for this case, which when you did, and I'm just going to tell people a little in advance, that you wrote the report, and then all of a sudden Shannon gets a call, we want to settle. And
But
what was the sense of your report? How did you write this report and willing to come up and testify? What did you do? How was that structured?
How did I do that?
Yes.
I just spent probably 100 hours altogether over a period of weeks and weeks compiling together in a understandable format and then modifying it to make it acceptable in a legal environment with Dan's help to make it from sources. Everything in it is sourced from credible sources, most of which are government sources and or highly regarded academic journals.
So you send this in with all this data. Now I'm sure your spouse's attorney saying, well, hold on a minute. You know, we're at a whole nother level. You'll probably have to go out and hire some more expert witnesses and everything else. And this is probably going to cost you a fortune. Let's sit down and settle. So now I'm going to throw it back to you. What ultimately happened there? Because we have maybe a couple more minutes left in the
show.
Well,
there was a conference 2 days before our hearing was supposed to. And I, from what I understand with from what Dan said, that obviously the judge's job is to think about the children, right? So she brought my counsel and opposing counsel in and said, hey, I'm looking at this report, but obviously there's things I've got going on with, you know, the FDA is still saying take this vaccine. Why don't you guys see if you can settle? And so my lawyer comes back to me and says, hey, and I'm like, you know, Dr. Ravenel's coming in 2 days, like, and so we basically look at it as, all right, well, now we're in negotiation here. You're in a legal negotiation. You have to look at it. And I didn't want to look at it like my kids were not property or something like that. But do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, but you almost
you
had a divorce.
You
almost
had
a theoretical. You had to divorce yourself from all the emotional parts of this thing with your children and everything else, and then try to find the courage to negotiate.
And so
this.
I said, you know, what is most important to me is that my kids don't get this thing. I don't want it. And again, like you said, my kids are older, and we were luckily able to leverage the fact that they technically, by the state of Pennsylvania, have ability to make their own decision in kinds of medical scenarios, not exactly maybe the vaccine, but in other ways. And so we basically said that, you know, my kids can choose because they're older. That was number one, knowing that my own children are hesitant about it, and my oldest one was not going to want to get it. And then basically saying that if they did choose, that it has to be the FDA Comirnaty one, which is not available in the United States currently.
Amazingly.
And so that would at least bide me some time, you know, in case to find out more information. Maybe it gets pulled by the FDA. Who knows, you know? So that would give me a little bit of a window. And then, you know, I'm inspecting the vials. I'm there. You know, he can't just, you know, take my kids and go get them vaccinated without me being there. For safety reasons, as a parent.
And you get custody back. You got your 50-50 custody back.
I got my custody back. Everything was going to go back to normal and for $5,000. And they said yes.
So before we part, Stan, we should bring Al Taubenberger on, because I know he is in favor of medical self-determination and not being forced to take. It's part of his platform. So Al Taubenberger is a friend of the show. He knows all of us, and he happens to be running for state representative. And what's the district, Al?
I'm running in the 172nd district, and the makeup of that doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but the makeup of that is parts of Burholm, all of Fox Chase, and Somerton.
Well, since Dr. Revelle is from South Philly, because I heard his South Philly accent.
No, you heard the Southern accent.
So it was a Southern accent. I thought it was a South Philly accent.
I know
accent.
You, Stan.
Doctor, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw that in there.
You know what? And I was following what you were you're talking about. When I was a little boy, and this comes from my mother, but we had a pediatrician that she really thought was tremendous. His name was Dr. Pratt. He lived in Northwood. And when the medicine came out to stop polio, he was still conservative, and he said, let's not rush to this, Mrs. Taubenberger. Let us wait and see how this is going. So there's nothing wrong with just taking a second look and making sure you have the confidence that the medicine is right. Mothers have been doing this from beginning of time almost, so there's nothing wrong with this. This makes a lot of sense. And then if you choose to do it, great. And if you choose not to do it, you should have every right to choose not to do it.
So, Al, real fast before we run out of time, how can people help you in your run for the State House? And do you have a website or anywhere else they can look for more information about you? And I promise we'll get you back on the show.
Well, that'll be great. Well, you can call me directly on my cell number, 215-806-0238. That's 215-806-0238. And my address is Taubenberger for State Representative, 2022, 2836 Edgemont Street, Philadelphia, PA, 19134. If somebody would like to make a donation or find out anything more about me.
Thank you, Al.
Right. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate that you've been
standing. Thank you for having me on. I do appreciate it.
And I, you know, appreciate that once you get the State House, the situation that happened to Shannon will be less likely to occur, because you'll stand there and fight with Doug Mastriano in making sure
Absolutely.
That we have at least medical justice in this society, because it was just unbelievable. Doctor,
that is absolutely correct.
Doctor, a couple other things that I think is important before the show ends, and I think you've actually accentuated some of the real concerns about why this jab, I'm going to call it a jab, I can't call it a vaccine, is affecting children, especially. Why do you think specifically it's affecting athletes in the way it has been? Because clearly there's some kind of relationship between the athletes who have had the COVID vaccine and the sudden deaths that have occurred.
Yeah, I think it's from a combination of two things primarily. One factor is that it is now there in my presentation to the court that I was prepared to testify. The heart, spike protein goes to the heart among other places that's been documented, and therefore the individual may have myocarditis but not even have symptoms enough to realize it, not know it. If there's a scar there, then they're at risk for sudden death because the heart rhythm areas of the heart get disrupted by a little scar. You may not know it's there, but if it is there, and if that's true, what happens is in intense exercise, and the more athlete somebody is, the more intensely they exercise, it produces epinephrine.
Whoops. Oh.
Oh, we dropped him.
He got dropped at the last minute.
Shannon, I've got to give you a lot of credit. Good job, Mama Bear.
Oh, that's funny because Dr. Ravenel calls me Mama Bear.
Yeah. And I'm glad that there are people that are beginning to stand up. And I'm asking all of you out there in the audience, you know, vote on election day. If you have to vote early, go there. But, you know, plan on hanging around those voting, those drop boxes if you have to. Now, there are some things that they're doing a little differently. They're only open from 8 to 8. There's supposed to be a guard there. But if you see anything unusual, such as somebody dragging them out and put them in the back of their car, please let us know, because that happened too. This is really a crazy time, because as Monica Crowley said, there is more of us than them. And just to give you some historical reference, when the Bolshevik Revolution occurred in Russia, they were less than 1% of the population. And through absolute, complete... hello, are you there?
I think that was Al.
Oh, so through absolute fear and intimidation, they were able to take over the whole country of Russia. And while they were there, they are probably close to 20, 30 million Russians died because of communism and central socialist government. Keep that in mind. So until next week, we are the Don't Back Down show. So Vicky, see you. And Annie, thanks for coming out.
And have
Shannon,
a great week,
your
everyone.
Your story is unbelievable. You are a hero in my eyes.
Thank you so much.
And anybody can contact any one of us for Shannon's information. If you need help with this, if you're in a situation where someone's trying to force the mRNA shot on you, get back with us. Thank you.
Let
have
us
a great
know.
Weekend.